This is Scanon. I'm Hal Dragseth. The medical world, a place of cold, sterile stainless steel, a world of big words and worry, objective diagnosis, and sometimes death.
So people have traditionally in our culture been dying a very sterile, very lonely, very impersonal kind of death. Witness that like 78% of the people who die in hospital. That's a very lonely, sterile kind of place.
Gus Nelson lives in a medical world and works to create a warmer human environment.
The hospital has become the place for the last measure of living, as it were, and it hasn't always been living with a plus. It's sometimes allowing people to die very much alone, very impersonal, very cold, and I think this is a travesty on human beings. People do not like pain. We don't like discomfort, and we will pay a great deal and go a long ways to get someone to relieve us of our pain and misery. And this places the physician, I think, in a unique kind of role and responsibility. If he's ethical, if he has a concern for the total well-being of people, he will do more than just write prescriptions and deal with episodic disease. He will be concerned with the total person, the whole person. He'll have a broad human ecological kind of awareness of where people live, a concern for the total family, the family interaction, the support systems there, the marital bond in the family, all the support systems that a patient who is a person has. And I think that today, as I see young physicians coming through, there is a keen interest in humanizing medicine, a keen interest in the patient as a person, and a growing awareness of the need of having multiple support systems there to assist the physician and the nurses and the whole paramedical team with the care of the person. The family is important. The team of skilled people who work with the dying patient is important. We're not neglecting the kind of feelings nurses have, who are the caregivers and sustain that caregiving, what kind of trauma they go through. So that it's important that we humanize in a very broad kind of way all the people who are involved with giving care to dying people and families, and that we all become our brother's keeper in very meaningful and personal and subjective ways. And medicine's changing tremendously in that respect. And it's fun to be a part of that change, to see these young residents coming out of residency programs who are very much concerned about very people-oriented, very person-oriented, and very family-oriented, and have a pretty clear kind of understanding of where ethics fits, not the etiquette of medicine, but the real ethical issues of medicine, and are not afraid to ask for help because they know that they do not have the answers at all to the sticky and very human and very difficult ethical problems that you work with in the medical scene. I see a very strong resurgence of that kind of lifestyle in young physicians who are willing to relate to patients who are persons as a person themselves, and who are not hiding behind the facade of cynicism and the mask of authority and the mask of a doctor, Mr. Control, who is in super control and who has super knowledge and who contains and who has all the keys and the mysteries to lock all the powers of life for people. I think there is a distinct humanization going on within medicine. The young people are far more serious today about the patient as a person, and to disclose something of their own humanity. They're being taught, for example, to do a far more effective job to interview patients, to know how to ask open-ended questions, to relate in a very humanistic, person-oriented kind of way. Many of them have been growing up, of course, in a very empirical, statistical, abstract world, and they know that that's not done anything but produce people who are divided rather than people who are united. I find also that a number of young medical students and young physicians are not afraid to share their faith in very realistic and meaningful kinds of ways with people. You may not always have the right to tell somebody what to do, but you have the right to tell somebody who you are and to express what makes sense to you. Why I don't drink, or why I don't use drugs, or why it's important for me to learn how to relax myself, to be responsible for relaxing and enjoying life and balancing my life and not have to use drugs or alcohol to do this. I can do this in other kinds of ways. Using drugs to get people off their high level of anxiety and worry, when in essence we need to assume that responsibility ourselves by balancing our life and by getting out from under the rat race, as it were. I think a lot of younger physicians are actually modeling that and teaching that, and that's a very holistic, I think, very meaningful concept. They're prescribing things like taking a hot bath at night and a nice cold glass of milk before you go to bed, and that'll probably help you sleep a lot better than being dependent upon sleeping pills all the time. So there is a modeling, I think, of younger people, and a lot of middle generation doctors are fed up with that particular stiff role of hiding behind a stethoscope, as it were, and are kind of disclosing themselves and telling people what works for them and why and so on. I think that's a good sign. Really, you, when it comes to healing, you're responsible for the healing. You're responsible for changing your behavior and doing things about your own life. And we're trying to marshal people's resources to accept that responsibility. We need to realize that our assumptions, our feelings, our awareness of life, our awareness of ourself, our self-acceptance, our loving ourselves, our being truly responsible people to live a good life, to know what's good for us and what isn't good for us, both in terms of things we do, foods we eat, and the attitudes we have a great deal to do about our feeling of well-being and our being well, as well as our feeling of being ill and our being ill. We know that the psyche and the soma are linked together in a very complex kind of way, and that the feelings I have inside me about being a person have a lot to do with what happens to my body, and vice versa, that the diseases are contagious, the illnesses in the soul are contagious in terms of the body getting them. So we have a whole field of psychosomatic medicine, which is a fascinating field that talks about the deep kinds of sometimes hidden emotional and attitudinal things that go on within us that we don't always let anybody know, because myself is so secret that I use all kinds of defenses to hide myself from other people. But once I can self-disclose and I have self-knowledge and I have some self-respect, I can enhance my self-esteem and my will can work to aid me to do this. I think part of the problem is that a lot of us are pretty ignorant about our body. We don't know how our bodies work and how they function, so we are totally ignorant about the systems in our body that work and how they work. And we, in a sense, are our bodies. That's what we see, feel, and experience in life. We ought to be able to be familiar with it. And we ought to at least like our bodies. A lot of people do not like their bodies. They have a very negative kind of view about it. They tolerate it. After all, if God gave me my body, why shouldn't I take care of it and know something about it and be proud of it and to work with it and to keep it in good shape? So I don't need to worship my body nor worship my soul. I need to worship God. But I need to respect my body. It's a very important gift to me that's been given, and to take care of it. I should know something about it and I should take care of it. We know more about our cars than we know about our bodies. You know, and hence we need to come, I think, to a more holistic perspective of how the body and the soul are really one. I am me. And when I walk into a room, all of me walks in there. When I have a hurt and anxiety and a worry, all of me is involved in that. So respecting my body as a very important part of me, as a gift given to me by my Creator, is I think a very important must. We're teaching young physicians. I've been in a medical school 6 years now, teaching young physicians how to be as comfortable listening as they are prescribing, really loving people in a very broad, inclusive way by being an effective listener. There aren't many doctors who've been good listeners, nor many people, in fact, who've been good listeners. Many families have not produced children who felt that parents were good listeners. I think the symbolism of listening is a very important way of showing you care. You're not in a hurry to put your trip on somebody else, or to push your agenda, or to get rid of you, or to dump you. The patient feels like you're the most important person in the world at that given moment to that physician. And he has a way, maybe he hasn't got a lot of time, but he has a way of sitting down and looking and communicating and listening that makes you feel that that's a very exclusive kind of relationship. We've all tend to pigeonhole knowledge. The philosophers had their category and they stayed there and philosophized. The lawyers had theirs, they stayed there and tended to law. The theologians had their particular kind of category and stayed there to theologize, if you will. The physicians of various types and colors had their pigeonholes, and the practitioner who works with families has his, and the internist has his and or hers, and the psychiatrist theirs, and so on. The sociologist has his perspective. And I think that we've seen that there needs to be kind of a common denominator in all these. I think that we need to see the interrelationship of all these things. As the human body is composed of many parts and many systems, organ systems and various functions of all the parts, it is still yet a unity. It is, in a sense, a oneness. And so I think in the body of a total world concept, we need to have a universal kind of awareness of all things interrelating and being dependent on each other. We know that a lot of people who overextend and who overexaggerate their physical needs are people who are doing this for other kinds of reasons. If I'm not loved, not accepted, if I'm very lonely and very frightened, the way I may show this is by converting a lot of my anxiety and my hysteria and my worries and my fears into somatic pains, complaints. The payoff that comes to us for being sick is a pretty sick thing. And we may have to do a better job of teaching people that really there's much more payoff for you of being well and functioning well and getting satisfaction. If we're working for a good day, and okay, so you got a little headache or your knee aches or something, but you can still function well and in doing a good job and doing your work well and responding well to people, it'll take care of itself. So we need to do a better job very early in life of rewarding people for being well rather than for being sick. Men in general, you know, are not taught to be very open about disclosure of feelings. The physicians are that way, bankers are that way, plumbers are that way, electricians are that way. Men are conditioned in our culture to not disclose feelings, so you don't share yourself as much with people. You may feel it, but you don't share it. I think what's happening is that there's a greater acceptance of men disclosing feelings and sharing what this patient means to you, or what this death is doing for you, or how badly you feel. The honesty of being open in a very appropriate kind of way is growing. I think this sort of thing is something that's been important for me to do. I learned that the hard way a long time ago, 20 years ago, of being very analytical and very methodical and very controlled and very technical in a sense about dealing with dying patients, to get far more open to sharing feelings. That's not easy for men to do. That transition is difficult, but I think it's very important. I had too much guilt in me left after leaving families where I had been very technical and very abstract and playing the role, you know. That guilt taught me that I had to rectify that. That was wrong to do. And so taking risks of reaching out and touching out and putting your arm around somebody who's very ill and holding the hand of a dying patient. And one of the rituals I like to use is for everybody, the family stand around the dying patient in the bed, and everybody holding hands, and of being able to have some kind of a ritual practice that makes a lot of sense for tying together the feelings people have, the feelings I have as a person at the deathbed scene, or the critically ill patient who may well be dying. The use of various kinds of symbols, the anointing of a dying patient, the invention of human kinds of touching, caring processes and symbolic gestures that mean a lot to me and do something for me, as I feel they do also for the people I work with. It took some risks to do that, but I found that every risk I took had a tremendous payoff for me, and I saw it in people. And you take one, you take another, and before long you begin to grow, you change. Things happen to you.
You've been listening to a remix version of SCAN, an electronic sweep of the horizon discovering God's activity in the world. We featured Dr. Gus Nelson on Humanizing Medicine. SCAN is a production of Select Learning, a continuing education program of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.